Well, this morning in the announcement time when I was giving her a little commercial for tonight, I told you about how I first noticed Grace Nussbaum, who has now been Grace Miller for over 30 years, and almost seems silly to refer to her as Grace Nussbaum. It doesn't even feel like those two names go together anymore. But you heard that part about freshman orientation and sitting beside each other in English class and all that. Now, I should tell you what happened a couple months later then. You know, we had regular contact with each other in those classes and between classes and at sports events and different things. And so I got this bright idea, at least I thought it was a bright idea, that I was going to ask her to go with me. Now, I don't even know if people use that lingo anymore, but 35 years ago, that was the lingo. You know, people went together, and that meant you were a couple. And so I don't even remember the details of how I went about doing this. It might have been a question I asked her personally, or it might have been a note that I sent her. But anyway, the question was dangling, and I didn't have an answer yet. And I figured, well, at least by tomorrow, I'll have an answer. And so I went to basketball practice and, you know, did all the things that we normally do. And when I came out afterwards, she was near the gym door waiting for me. And here again, she's probably got a better grasp on the details than I do, but I remember some of the things. And she came up to me and said, "I have an answer to your question." And I thought, okay. And then she just came up to me and gave me a kiss on the cheek and turned around and left. And that was the first time I'd ever been kissed. And furthermore, she had this really interesting perfume that she wore. And some of it managed to get onto my coat. I had a shiny windbreaker coat. I don't know if there was some static electricity going on with the windbreaker, but the perfume stayed on the coat. Okay? So that night, I had to go with a class to Oberlin College for a field trip. It was an arts appreciation class, and we were going up there, and there were these buildings that had all these different displays in them, and we had to go around and see them all and take notes and report back on them and all that stuff. So all night, as we're walking around up there at Oberlin College, I would think back to the kiss. And then I'd put my head down and take a whiff of the windbreaker with the perfume on it. And I'd just get all kinds of tinglings up and down my spine. You know, it was just goosebumps. I was on a perfume high, I guess. But, you know, looking back on the whole thing, it was all extremely short-sighted and pretty much selfish when you get right down to it. I was enjoying myself. I was really enjoying this. And that's about as far as I could think. You know, it was just that I was enjoying myself because I was now going with this really nice girl. And so there's nobody that's going to question that we're made with an attraction to the opposite sex. God put that in us. We have that. So the question is, how are we going to respond to this pull, this magnetic attraction? And God's will is for many, many, many people to get married. You know, statistically, I would say most people. It's not God's will for every person, but for many. And so the issue we want to tackle here in this session and in the session next week is, how do we get from the point of singleness to marriage in a godly sequence, in a way that that pleases God. We know marriage is His will. We've got a lot of details about it in the Bible. And we have a lot of other information about things that are His will. And so we want to apply those things to this matter, to this issue of how we relate. So the place to really start is with God's standard, His statements about marriage. So that's where we're going to start, and then we'll kind of back up from that a little bit and look at ways that we can move in that direction in a God-honoring way. John Piper said in his book, This Momentary Marriage, that you cannot say too often that marriage is a model of Christ and the church. You just can't overdo that. It's an amazing working model of Christ and the church. And there are several things this does. It lifts marriage up from the bad image you get off of sitcoms and from the secular media, and gives it that meaning that God really meant it to have. It gives marriage a solid basis in grace, since God obtained and sustains His bride through grace. And it shows that a husband's headship and a wife's submission are crucial. I heard John Piper last spring, and so when I read his book, I could almost hear him preaching it. He has high energy. He preaches! You know, he's one of those guys, and about every other sentence is forceful. But we're going to read Ephesians 5, verses 22 to 33. So if you've got your Bible, I'd like to read that right now. While you're finding it, just a couple more comments about this concept that human marriages are meant to showcase God's grace. And husbands and wives do this by resting in the experience of God's grace and bending it outward from their vertical experience into the horizontal experience. You know, you've heard it said that how we relate to God affects how we relate to others. Well, and that's true in a marriage. You know, as your relationship with God grows and moves ahead in grace, the effect of it reaches out and touches other people, especially those close to you. Okay, so Ephesians 5, 22 to 33. Say, wives, be subject to your own husbands as to the Lord. For the husband is the head of the wife, as Christ also is the head of the church, He Himself being the Savior of the body. But as the church is subject to Christ, so also the wives ought to be to their husbands in everything. Husbands, love your wives, just as Christ also loved the church and gave Himself up for her, that He might sanctify her, having cleansed her by the washing of water with the word, that He might present to Himself the church in all her glory, having no spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that she should be holy and blameless. So husbands ought also to love their own wives as their own bodies. He who loves his own wife loves himself. For no one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes and cherishes it, just as Christ also does the church, because we are members of his body. For this cause, a man shall leave his father and mother, and shall cleave to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. This mystery is great, but I am speaking with reference to Christ and the church. Nevertheless, let each individual among you also love his own wife, even as himself, and let the wife see to it that she respect her husband. Now, this is a really powerful section, but it's important that we don't just pull it out from Ephesians and isolate it from the rest of the book. You know, when Paul wrote the book to the church at Ephesus, he wrote the whole book. Now we divide it up into six chapters and quite a few verses, but it was a whole unit when it was originally written. And you've got on your pages there just a really, really quick overview of some of it. There where it says Ephesians 5, 22 to 33 are in the context of the entire book. and then you've got a really quick rundown. And I'm just going to zoom right through it. Since you've got it in front of you there, I probably won't lose you. But very simply stated, in chapter 1, we find out that God chose his people. Chapter 2, he makes them alive in Christ. And then also in chapter 2, he's building his church. More about that in chapter 3. Chapters 4 through 6, he's strengthening and unifying his church. And then I listed a number of different statements that come to us that we often refer to and think about. Speak the truth in love, work and give, forgive each other, walk in love, live pure lives, expose the darkness, don't be drunk with wine, be filled with the Spirit, encourage one another in song, be thankful. Husbands love wives, wives submit to and respect husbands, children obey parents, parents train your children, slaves obey masters, masters remember your master, believers put on the armor of God, pray for each other. There, the list could be three times this long at least. But all of these things are about words, actions, attitudes that should be helping and uplifting those around us. That's how God's love is lived out through us. And it's important to remember that all those things apply to marriages, too. You know, sometimes we get this idea that, well, you know, we've got these special instructions for husbands and wives, and we forget that all of the Scripture applies to all of us. And so we need to keep the big picture in mind as much as possible. Now, in that section that we read in Ephesians chapter 5, there are a number of really major statements that are made there. Specific statements like, husbands, love your wives. That's really important. We husbands need to love our wives because as that evidence is shown in our lives, people around us are seeing an example of Christ in the church. That's pretty sobering, pretty scary in a way, guys, don't you think? And then wives are to respect their husbands. That's clearly stated. And that's pretty overwhelming, too, to think that your example is supposed to mirror how the church is supposed to follow Christ. Another amazing statement in verse 31, for this cause a man shall leave his father and mother and shall cleave to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. This mystery is great, but I'm speaking with reference to Christ and the church. So he just took a statement from the Old Testament about God's intention for a man and a wife to be joined physically and equated it to Christ and the church. Whoa, that's pretty heavy. So, in other words, God is 100% for physical intimacy in marriage. He designed it. He is all for it. And it's even part of the picture of Christ in the church. Wow. Came across a book the other day titled Holy Sex. And that's really what God intended for sex to be, holy. An amazing, wonderful union between a husband and wife that love each other. So it's a picture of Christ in the church. So that's the foundational information that we've got. Now, the challenge is, how do we get from people in the state of singleness to marriage and do it in a godly way? That's what we want to try to investigate. And for many people, it's a really challenging transition. And when you think about it, the biggest help that married people can offer is they can be an example of a godly marriage. And it's just crucial. I don't think this can be overstated. if husbands and wives don't have a strong bond, loving relationship with each other, if they don't model that to their children, then here's what the children are going to conclude about a close relationship. They're going to conclude that the best way to have a really close, wonderful friendship is somewhere else, not the way my family does it. That's what they'll conclude. So, couples, parents, husbands, wives, it's so crucial that we model a good, strong, loving relationship. We just can't allow the world to give the direction. And if we're not giving positive direction and example and guidance, then they'll turn to someone else. And there's plenty of other information available. It just comes pouring in from the internet and from the television and from billboards and magazines and friends at school and friends down the street, and the list just goes on and on and on. Information that is completely contrary to what we have in the Bible. But if they aren't getting it from here, they'll get it from there. Now, I'm going to be painting with some really broad strokes, okay? So like I said earlier, bear with me and please come back next week. But what I'm going to go through here in the next number of minutes is a list that came from a book written by Joshua Harris called I Kiss Dating Goodbye. And basically his premise is that the modern dating method, system, idea is mostly unbiblical, and I would, by the way, recommend the book to you. He does a good job of spelling some things out, and from personal experience, why he chose to take a step back, or many steps back, from the contemporary common method of relating guys and girls. Now, sometimes you have to blast before you can build, as Howard Hendricks once said. You got to get the other structure out of the way so you can build the right structure. So tonight we'll look at some of the negatives, and next time we meet we're going to try to work on some positive principles. We're going to try to implement Romans 12:21 on this subject. So the seven habits of highly defective dating. You've got those on the back side of your page, and we'll run through those right now. Number one, modern dating, the way most of us are familiar with seeing it conducted, leads to intimacy but not necessarily to commitment. Now, when I was in high school, I never really thought through it in these words, but looking back, yeah, that's what was happening in a lot of cases. There was an interest in what was going to benefit me, and I saw this happening around me with others too, but not really an interest in, well, how can I really serve and help and encourage, but it's what's in it for me. Jamie was a junior in high school, and her boyfriend Troy was a senior. And for about 8 months, they just did everything together. You know, they were inseparable. In the vernacular of my day, they were going together. And then, just a couple of months before he left for college, Troy told Jamie he was done. So this whole idea of some kind of a special relationship that then can just be broken is not it's not healthy. Some have called it divorce training. you know, you go along with this special friendship for a while, and then you decide, I'm done. You just kind of chop it off, throw it away. Deepening intimacy without defining a level of commitment is really dangerous. It'd be like if you were going mountain climbing and you got about 2,000 feet up there on this rock face and your partner started talking about, I'm not really sure I want to hold the rope anymore because it really ties me down. That's kind of what happens a lot of times. Everything's just kind of vague and undefined and, hey, yeah, come with me. We'll have a great time. And pretty soon you're way up there or way over here, and then the other person just pulls the plug. Many people experience deep hurt when they open themselves up emotionally, physically, only to be abandoned by others who proclaim that they're not really ready for serious commitment. So it turns a lot of times into a game, and who comes out ahead and who doesn't. Harris wrote, "Intimacy without commitment, like icing without cake, can be sweet, but ends up making us sick." Number two, dating tends to skip the friendship stage of a relationship. Dating tends to skip the friendship stage of a relationship. You know, in a true friendship, you don't feel pressured by knowing that you like the other person and that she likes you back, he or she likes you back. You feel free to be yourself and do things together without spending 3 hours in front of the mirror getting ready. C.S. Lewis described friendship as two people walking side by side toward a common goal. Their mutual interest brings them together. And a lot of times in modern dating scenarios, this just gets skipped because the romantic attraction, the thrill of this other person that you're really interested in just kind of takes over center stage. And the premise of dating is, well, I'm attracted to you, therefore let's get to know each other. But the premise of friendship is we're interested in the same things, so let's enjoy these common interests together. Now, if after developing a friendship, romantic attraction forms, then that's a bonus. But it's much healthier for a friendship to be established before the romance is the key focus. Number three, dating often mistakes a physical relationship for love. You know, the thrill and the surprise at the physical reaction just takes over. I made a big deal about how overwhelmed I was by getting a kiss. I can remember sitting next to, I don't even know who this was. I don't think it was Grace. Another girl in school when we were in this kind of a setting. We were in rows, and she leaned over to get something and brushed against me, and I was just amazed at the effect that had on me. You know, it was just woo. And another time, sitting beside a girl in a van as we were going to a school event, and we were, you know, scrunched into the back seat of this big 15-passenger van. And so, especially a young person, if they haven't had much input from their parents about sexuality, about how they're affected by members of the opposite sex, they all of a sudden feel all these vibes, and they say, "Whoa, this must be love. This is great stuff. I never got to this feeling before." And it's not true love. It's a physical response. And a lot of times, what happens is the more physical touch that starts going on in a relationship, the less communication happens. You don't have to talk if you're having all this much fun. Just, you know, physically involved and attracted. Number four, dating often isolates a couple from other vital relationships. You know, dating is about two people focusing on each other. And in most cases, the rest of the world just fades into the background. So it often isolates a couple from other vital relationships. Elizabeth Elliot said, "Unless a man is prepared to ask a woman to be his wife, what right has he to claim her exclusive attention? Unless she has been asked to marry him, why would a sensible woman promise any man her exclusive attention?" And yet that's a lot of times what happens in these dating scenarios. There's a claim made by these people on each other, and other people just kind of get left out. And it's just not healthy, not natural. Now, my wife has a story to tell from our high school days that fits right in with this, so she's going to come right now and take the microphone.
After Dell, so-called, asked me to go together with him, we found ourselves spending a lot of time together, more and more each day. In fact, before we knew it, before school started, you know, we were together. Between classes, we were together. At lunch hour, we were together. After school, we were together. And after school activities, we were together. One day, Dell left me know before school started that he was sick and wasn't able to come to school. I went to school, and Dell wasn't there. What was I to do? I had lots of friends, but my friends found out they couldn't count on me because I was with Dell all the time, and I should say Del Mar in those days. They couldn't count on me. So they found other people to be with before school, between classes, on the lunch hour, after school, and after school activities. They weren't there for me, so I had to go looking for my friends who had found other friends to be with. And did that hit me hard that day when Dell wasn't there? I went and talked to one of my friends, and she said, "But Grace, you're not there for us, so we have to find other people to be with." And I realized how important my girlfriends were in my life. I needed them. But because I wasn't there for them, they found some other people. Yeah, I was still their friend, but in the lunch hour, they had found somebody else to eat lunch with. And like that. I went to my friends, and I apologized to them that I wasn't there for them, that they couldn't count on my friendship to be there when they needed me. I went to Dell, and I said, "Dell, something has to change. We cannot be together all the time." So we made the decision that we were going to spend our time together at his house or at my house with my family or with his family. Yeah, we went to another room sometimes and talked alone, but our families were there. A blessing that came from that was my family got to know Dell. Dell's family got to know me. At one time in our relationship when we broke up, my mom and dad bawled because they loved Dell. They had learned to love Dell so much. They were upset when we broke up. And I thought that was so neat that they were affected, not just me. That's a value of dating at home with your family so that your families get to know the person that you're seeing also.
Thank you. Okay, number five. Dating in many cases distracts young adults from their primary responsibility of preparing for the future. And you get so wrapped up in relationship with somebody else that it just takes all your time. And that was kind of alluded to there as well. And it's been said that the most important thing you can do in your teens and in your 20s is to prepare for what you're going to do in your 30s and 40s and 50s. Now, when you're in that earlier bracket, you don't think that way. It's tends to be a little bit shorter sighted, but later on it'll make more sense, because those later years are when you'll really have the most influence, the greatest ministry with other people, And so you need to look at those earlier times as preparation, strong preparation. I know a lot of young people that do view it that way, and I'm really glad for that. But there's a lot that don't think that far ahead. Number six, dating can cause discontentment with God's gift of singleness. You know, dating plays a big role in fostering dissatisfaction because it gives single people just enough intimacy to make them wish they had more. So, you need to look at singleness as a point in your life where you're at the time, and that there are certain things that you can do now to help you prepare for later, but rushing into a premature relationship that gobbles up lots of your time and causes discontentment is obviously not healthy. Number seven, dating creates an artificial environment for evaluating another person's character. It's not reality. You know, going out to eat and going to different programs and events and always being just dressed so, that's not reality. You really need to see people in an everyday kind of environment. Two people that would be thinking of possibility of marriage need to make sure they don't just interact within the romantic settings of dating. Their priority shouldn't be to get away from real life. They need a strong dose of reality. They need to see each other in real life settings of family and friends, and they need to see each other serving and working. So, how does he interact with other people? Or how does she react when things don't go the way they were planned? Well, these kind of things are really valuable. For a long time, I think the church, the people of the church, have just been using the world's model for relationships. And it's just got a lot of deficiencies. We've listed seven of them here. I'm sure we could go on and on. But let me try to take my go at a summary of it. You know, a lot of this on this second page is from Joshua Harris, and I think he's done a fine job. I'd recommend reading his book, I Kiss Dating Goodbye. And he has another book that came after that called Boy Meets Girl, in which he presents a lot of the positive elements. But it just strikes me that we want some of the benefits and some of the goodies of a special relationship before we're really ready for it. Now, there should be a willingness for commitment before we start engaging in all these other things. Now, I'm not saying that you should have no friends or that you shouldn't talk with members of the opposite sex. I'm not saying that. But the model that we get off of TV in particular is not a godly model. Now, it's a really amazing statistic that came from a Roper survey. 96% of these people that were polled claimed that they watch television less than the average person. 96% said they watch less than the average. Well, who's the average then? If 96% of them are less than the average. Hello. Something wrong here. So if you feed yourself a steady diet of the world's perspective on things, it's going to shape the way you think. We need to make this our standard, not the world's ideas. Now, revisit Ephesians chapter 5 with me for a little bit and ask yourself this. Does the world's method of dating promote any of the qualities that God tells us about in that portion that we read? verses 22 to 33? Does it promote true godly love? Does it promote submission? That word is just about a dirty word according to the world now. Oh, you can't let yourself be treated like a doormat. You ever hear that? Does the world's method of dating promote a quality of service? About cleansing? About purity? About selfless giving? About respect? No, it's all about what I can get for me. It's selfishness that we see portrayed time and time again. You know, I can recall some things, quite a few things, about dating 35 years ago. And I am sure the overall mindset of society has not gotten any better. I'd be fairly confident it's gotten worse in the last 35 years. And so often, people are hurt in these contexts. Young ladies are often the most interested in a close relationship and friendship, and they become too involved physically in order to promote the relational aspect. Guys, on the other hand, go along with the relational interaction to get the benefits of some physical gratification. The entire situation promotes selfishness to the max. Take a look with me at Ephesians 5, verses 17 to 24. I think this is a good way to bring this portion to a close. Ephesians 5, verses 17 to 24 say this. This I say, therefore, and affirm together with the Lord, that you walk no longer just as the Gentiles also walk in the futility of their mind, being darkened in their understanding, excluded from the life of God because of the ignorance that is in them, because of the hardness of their heart. And they, having become callous, have given themselves over to sensuality for the practice of every kind of impurity with greediness. But you did not learn Christ in this way, if indeed you have heard him and have been taught in him, just as truth is in Jesus, that in reference to your former manner of life, you lay aside the old self, which is being corrupted in accordance with the lust of deceit, and that you be renewed in the spirit of your mind, and put on the new self, which in the likeness of God has been created in righteousness and holiness of the truth. As I said earlier, please don't leave here and say, oh, there's no way I'm coming back next week. This guy is out in the left field. You got to hear next week if you heard this part. You won't have the whole story. So please come back next week as we try to go on from here and provide some positive input to balance all the negative that we've shared tonight.